Hello, Internet. My name is Jonathan Cook.
And I'm Matt Noble.
And we're bringing you a very special podcast this week. A podcast, to be honest, I'm actually very proud of. Matt?
Yes.
Why am I feeling so proud?
Well, 5 years ago to this day, two young boys had a dream. A dream of starting up a podcast of talking about films and movies and...
Five more years.
Yeah, there are no term limits for podcasters. Yeah, come on. So
the intern's getting a bit excited there. Thank you, guys. We'll pay you one day.
Yeah. Oh, I had a surprise. Did you hear that?
Every time we celebrate something, I think Matt's killed himself on the podcast.
It was a party popper.
Party popper. Come celebrate with us, guys. 5 years of Screen Verdict. I think we might have told the story, but indulge us. We're going to celebrate. Like the comic book films, you know, we've seen Uncle Tony get shot like 7 times. We're going to tell you the story of how Screen Verdict came to be. So
yes.
I was born in England, and when I was 6 years old, my family moved to Australia. And my parents made some friends, I believe, at a church group with a couple of families, including the McIntoshes and the Nobles. Those names might sound familiar from Sebastian McIntosh, a friend and guest of the podcast, and Noble, Matt Noble, my dear friend and co-host.
Yes.
Matt, what do you remember from those days? I think I would have been about 6. You might have been 7 or 8 when we first met. What was Jonathan like as a young, scrappy kid?
You were very good at sports. You were really into the basketball. You had all the Charlotte Hornets gear, and you were quite good, or at least seemed quite good to me, who wasn't good at basketball at all. And then, like, every year you sort of took up a different sport. It's like, then the next year you were, like, the best cricketer, and then the next year you were, like, the best AFL player. But you were very good at sport. We went out. We always played. Bass was really into cricket, so we often ended up just playing cricket due to what Bass wanted to do, and that was pretty fun. And you were very competitive.
See, that's funny because I was thinking, oh, how should I describe like competitive? That's how I was going to describe you. I remember one time. I don't know why this isn't a thing that adults do, but when you're a kid, you race. You say, I'll race you to the top of the driveway.
Yeah.
And I don't know how old we were at the time, probably 7 or 8. And you said, all right, let's race from the gate to the top of the driveway. So we raced, and I won. And you said, let's go again. And we raced, and I won. You're like, let's go again. I thought, at what point does Matt think this is going to flip? He's going to time it, and just through sheer determination, maybe I trip one time, and that's the one that really counts.
Knowing me, I would have won one and then wanted to do another, like, okay, I know I can beat him once, and now I need to beat him one more time than he beat me, so we've got to do another 20. Yeah. Like,
I lost the first 12, so best 13 out of 25.
Yeah, exactly. Very confident young boy, since you did little athletics every, like, Saturday. You're on, like, the track and field team. Like,
I also remember Matt was a little bit cheeky. I feel like Baz, he was sort of the responsible one of the group. And then we would kind of, like, take turns coming up with schemes that, like, may or may not get us into trouble.
Yeah. Bass was always very concerned about getting in trouble.
That's your greatest fear as an 8-year-old. It's not, you know, am I going to be able to pay the bills? You know, am I making the right professional decisions? It's the worst thing that can happen in your day is getting in trouble.
I, as an adult, look back on things and go, oh my gosh, I had no idea how low the stakes were when I was a kid. I had no idea how much I could have gotten away with relatively low consequences.
So fast forward a couple of years, Matt and I went to different schools, but we ended up going to the same university.
Yeah, so really during school, we weren't, like, high school was sort of our time apart a bit. Like, we'd see each other at things every now and then. Like, it's not like we weren't in touch at all, but, like, we weren't really we didn't really know much about each other's high school lives, to be honest.
Yeah, we met up maybe a couple of times a year, usually through family things, at Christmas or Easter. But I guess through Facebook, I don't know, we didn't really have, all that sort of social media. So we didn't really stay in contact that much until you went to Macquarie University to do media and screen production. I went to Macquarie University to do commerce. 2 years later, decided I wanted to do media and screen production.
As always, following in my footsteps.
It's hard to get out of Matt's shadow. I had to get all the way to America just to try.
Yeah, yes.
And because we, even if we weren't necessarily doing the same classes, although we did do share a couple of classes, we met up at lunch, and one of our favorite things to talk about, just a shared interest, was film and television.
Yes. Yeah, definitely. So we, like, we just chatted, usually at the bar, like, we'd often, like, over a game of pool at the bar, I remember, having some good chats.
Yeah, I remember Matt saying, all right, best 13 out of 25.
Not too far off.
Yeah, at JB Hi-Fi, we'd be dropping what little money we made on the HBO box sets.
Oh, yeah, I remember when you bought Deadwood at the DVD shop, and the, like, guy selling it to you goes, that'll be $30, you cocksucker.
It was probably season one, and I had no idea why he said that.
Oh, good times.
So at some point during these conversations, we were like, oh, man, we're having so much fun. We need to record these conversations and put them on the internet. And I believe you, Matt, because we had discussed doing other things, maybe videos, doing something creative. You were the person that introduced me to podcasts.
Yeah, like, I'd been listening to a podcast. It's like they weren't really on that podcast talking about anything that different to what we were talking about or in a similar way, stuff like that. And I thought, oh, I'm really enjoying these conversations with Jonathan. Why don't we just record them so the whole world can enjoy these conversations with Jonathan?
We wanted to give back.
Yeah. So,
so there you go.
Went down to see Cars 2 on one fateful afternoon.
Yeah, we were big fans of Pixar. Had seen, I think, all the films. Maybe watched one or two more. Needed to watch just a couple. But we decided to go watch Cars 2. We came up with the idea, let's go watch Cars 2. We'll talk about it and then see how it compares to all the other Pixar films.
Which was quite an epic podcast, a ranking of all the Pixar films. We went through every single Pixar film, which up until Cars 2 was probably the most impressive canon of films any studio had ever put out. I think aside from Cars 2, Cars was our lowest one, and we really like Cars.
Yeah, Cars is a good film.
Yeah. So that was like, it was really a studio that had an unprecedented sort of like just no strikes in 13 films or something like that, or 12, for however many it was.
So over the years, we've talked about a lot of different TV series, a lot of films, but Pixar's been kind of a special studio for us. We always liked reviewing their films because it was this film that it was the podcast that kicked us off. 5 years ago, July 2011, and it's very fitting that we will be doing another Pixar review and adding to our famous Pixar rank in our five-year anniversary podcast.
Yes, so every new Pixar film, we add it to that original rank we did in that podcast. We will be doing the same today with Finding Dory. Where does it stand? Higher than Finding Nemo? Lower than Finding Nemo? Will it be the top of the list? Will this be the greatest Pixar film ever made, or will it be the bottom of the list? Is it worse than even Cars 2, which was a massive disappointment?
So let's kick things off with Finding Dory. Are we going to do spoilers in the podcast?
Yeah, let's spoil it. Yeah, I think people have seen it. It's very popular. Let's spoil it.
All right. We're throwing out all the favorite screen verdict techniques segments. So we're going to hit you with a spoiler alert.
Yes.
Spoiler alert! Spoiler alert!
Who did you see Finding Dory with, Jonathan? Because we got to see Cars 2 together, but because we're in different countries, we couldn't do that with Finding Dory.
I did see Finding Dory with Bonnie, and she is notorious for the claim, or notorious in my mind, I don't know how widespread it is, for saying that she doesn't like animated films, and then every animated film we see, she enjoys. So I was interested to see whether that trend would continue with Finding Dory.
Mm. Did it?
I'll have to get a number from her, but I would say pretty good. I'd say pretty good.
You've been going out with it for a while, Jonathan. I thought you'd have a number by now. Yeah. Comedy. Sorry.
Very good. So, yes, who did you see Finding Dory with?
I got in a bit of a bind because, like, a lot of people saw it the first week it came out and I didn't. But one of my really good friends, have you met Liz?
I've heard the name. I'm not sure if I have met Liz.
Oh, well, I have a really good friend, Liz, and that was really fun. So, yeah.
Very cool.
Yeah. She likes animated movies, she likes Disney stuff, and yeah, it was enjoyed by her. I won't say whether it was enjoyed by me.
So, Finding Dory, it's been a while since Finding Nemo. That was pretty early in the Pixar schedule. Finding Nemo released 2003. So, they're all grown up. Not you'd be able to tell, seeing as the film starts off with Dory as a little baby fish.
Yes.
What's the term for baby fish? You know how a baby cow is a calf, baby lion's a calf. What's a baby fish?
Little sardine. It's a sardine's a small fish. It's a sardine.
I don't think that's right, but let's go with that. Little sardine Dory. Big eyes, very cute, and we learn that what she was like as a little child, and her parents were trying to teach her basic ways to deal with her forgetfulness. So this is something that she's always had. Cut to the present time, and Dory's off doing a daily thing, hanging out with the gang. Always getting into, getting into mischief based on her lack of short-term memory.
Yeah, and, like, this is what I say, like, what did you find? Because, like, in Finding Nemo, you're sort of like Dory and Marlin are friends, and Nemo's sort of the kid. Like, is sort of Dory now become sort of like a brother or sister to Nemo, or she become like a mate with Marlin? Like, is she sort of more like a kid or like an adult in this? Like, I was a bit confused.
Yes, that's a good question. It's been 13 years, but Nemo is still pretty small. And Dory, I guess she's probably a fully grown fish, but she has childlike features. She's very enthusiastic. She's rather innocent, sometimes naive. So I guess I sort of viewed her more as a friend for Nemo because I thought of her as quite childlike.
Yeah. Do we ever see something happening with her and Marlin?
You mean romantically? Do you think she's finding Dory? She's Nemo's mum now?
Yeah. Like, do we see that happening, or is she more like Nemo's mate?
Just the friend that's always there every Thanksgiving.
Yeah.
Yeah. But maybe I didn't catch that, so I'm going to say it wasn't overt.
Yeah, no, I don't think there was anything there, but, like, if the next film there was something happening, would you be like, oh, that's a bit weird, or we'd be like, oh, no, they've sort of been friends for a while.
Yeah. I don't know. I feel like they're friends.
Okay. That's good. We don't need to make everything into a romance. As long as you used to be good mates.
So the story takes a bit of a turn when Dory has a bit of a flashback, realizing she has a family. She's like, oh my gosh, I've been off on all these adventures and living in this new part of the ocean, but I don't have my parents.
Yeah, and there's quite this heartbreaking scene where you see her lose her parents and then that montage of her, like, looking for them, looking for them, looking for them, and getting further and further away from them as she looks for them and then sort of starts to forget them, and then she bumps into Marlon.
Yeah, I said earlier the worst thing that can happen in your day as a child is getting in trouble. I'd say the worst thing that can happen probably from the age of 5 or under is losing your parents. I think that's something we can all remember, a time where we lost our parents. I remember I was at Disneyland.
Oh, no!
And I was in the maze. I was in the hedge maze, and I lost my parents. And I thought, this is the worst place to lose your parents. I'm never going to get out of this maze.
Literally surrounded by dead ends.
So I lived in the maze and was raised by wolves. And here I am today. No, I did find my mum, but yeah, that in finding Dory, that kind of elicited a response out of me, and I thought that, you know, probably connected with a lot of people.
Yeah. And then you add on to it, because of short-term memory loss or memory loss, that she forgets them even existing sort of thing is pretty heartbreaking.
Yeah, definitely.
So, she remembers her parents, as you said, so the stakes are relatively high at this point. When she remembers her parents and wants to get back to them. We're invested.
Yes, and so they decide to go on another adventure across the Pacific. They ride some currents with their good friend Crush.
This was a movie heavy on new characters and light on old characters. And this was sort of one of the few sort of cameos from Finding Nemo's adventure.
Yes, I was really excited to see Crush for two reasons. One, I went to Maui in May and saw a bunch of turtles and was just became really obsessed with turtles. Like, turtles are my favorite animal at the moment.
They're just like a kid in third grade.
They're like, you're like, Jonathan, do you have, you know, an on-running, like a current status for favorite animal?
Yeah.
Yes, I do, and it's currently turtle.
How many turtles are in your room, Jonathan? Like, how many toys and figures, and have you gone on a turtle binge?
I did buy a wood-carved, turtle fridge magnet, and I do have a turtle candle holder.
Okay.
So I've gone moderately insane.
Okay. Oh, no, this is great. My favourite animal's also in this movie. So, there you go.
Are you going to drop that in later?
I guess I'm going to say now. It's a dolphin.
Yeah, dolphins are good. Dolphins are up there.
I like that they're clever and they can swim and do cool stuff.
Oh, yeah, they do backflips, all kinds of crazy stuff.
And I think they've got empathy. I think they're one of the only animals with empathy. And they've got self-awareness because they can see each other themselves in a mirror and know that it's them. I like there's some good traits to dolphins.
Yeah. I've always said goats were sociopaths.
Yeah. Anyway, enough about my favourite animals. You liked seeing Crush for that reason. There's a second reason you were excited to see Crush.
Oh, just as... they have an exhibit or whatever you call it at Disneyland. And my family came over and we went to Disneyland in December. And there is, they have this animate, you basically just look at a screen, and there's an animation of a turtle, but somehow they animate it in real time. You ask them a question, and it's aimed at 5-year-olds, but I was there, and I very much enjoyed it. And the kids will say, how fast can a turtle swim? And then he'll be like, oh, let me show you. And then he swims, like, across the screen as fast as he can. And I'm like, how are they animating this in real time. Maybe Crush is real, and I'm just being cynical. But he was very funny. Crush was definitely one of my favorite experiences at Disneyland and one of my favorite characters from the first film.
Oh, great. Yeah, no, this kid's right. You're probably there for like 4 hours of your Disneyland day was looking at the screen trying to figure out how Crush worked. So, we got him. Here's one thing with this film. It took a whole movie to get from Brisbane to Sydney. We're Finding Nemo. They just get to LA very quickly.
Yeah, they certainly didn't take the 405. They found a rather traffic-free current and zipped them all the way to Cali.
Yeah.
I guess it was just the lure of Sigourney Weaver's voice. It was very powerful. Quite a prominent character of sorts in the film. She is, I can't even remember what it's called, but it's some sort of California Institute of Marine Life or something.
It's an aquarium. They've got tanks of fish and people come in and look at them, and there's some sort of angle of conservation attached to it.
Yeah, this... So, it's a little early jumping into the themes, but this was sort of a question that I had. Do you think the film was pro the aquarium, or was the aquarium kind of the bad guy? You know, because you could view it as, oh, the aquarium's doing great things, you know, they help unhealthy fish get better and then they release them, and by having the aquarium, people get to learn about them and care about getting involved in conservation. Or is it, oh, it's just a corporate thing, viewing these things in a cage when they want to be out free in the ocean?
I think it was fairly neutral and maybe slightly positive, because a lot of the fish and stuff were fine being in the aquarium. Like, I didn't hear many complaints from the fish in the aquarium. I think maybe, if anything, it was a bit of maybe a negative, real negative message about those touch pools that they have in aquariums, where kids can touch the fish and things. That seemed pretty traumatic. But the rest of it seemed fine. They all seemed pretty happy. They have plenty of space and things. Even the whale shark didn't seem to mind too much being in there.
Yeah, and maybe that is a reflection of... Well, I think it's sort of a matter of execution. You know, with zoos or aquariums, I think if things are in tiny spaces and it's poor conditions and it's all just about, you know, lowering expenses to increase your profits, I think that's not good. But if they have big spaces, they're well looked after, and a lot of that money is going towards conservation, that sort of thing, then, you know, I think that could be a good thing. So, you know, maybe the film showed both sides of that.
Yeah. So Dory gets tagged and captured by the aquarium people. And then she is then in this aquarium, and and Marlin and Nemo have to try to find her. It's pretty much the process of the movie. Well, she tries to find her parents, I guess.
Yeah, she's trying to find her parents, and she meets an octopus, and the octopus wants her tag. We're not sure whether we like this octopus, whether he's trustworthy, but he wants... Because he lost a tentacle, and he's afraid of going back to the ocean. He actually wants to go to the aquarium in Cleveland. So it's kind of like he's helping her, but it's for his own good, really. He just wants to get that tag.
Yeah.
And along the way, they meet a bunch of, as you say, they meet a bunch of new characters. There were some kind of funky people. Who do we have? Those seals were pretty mental.
Yeah,
The sea lions, yeah.
Yeah. Actually, one of my friends had an ethical dilemma with the seal scene.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, an ethical dilemma, my friend Grace. And she was saying that the whole message of Finding Nemo is meant to be, you know, caring and being sensitive to those with disabilities. Nemo's got, like, you know, fins aren't even. Dory's got short-term memory loss. But there seems to be a seal with some issues that is bullied by the other SEALs, and his perhaps mental illness is made light of by the movie.
Yeah, I can see that. I think, you know, he clearly had a monobrow, or something needs to be trimmed.
A monobrow is not necessarily a disability.
Well, here's the thing. For humans, you know, having a monobrow is a choice, because you can just trim that. But as a SEAL, that's not a choice. You're kind of stuck with that.
Mm. Yeah.
But no, well, I guess that's a good point, because in general, when it comes to that sort of thing, I wonder, is it funnier than it is mean? And I think it probably was, but at the same time, it does sort of undercut that message of, like, inclusion and just, you know, being, you know, everyone being equal sort of message that that Finding Nemo and Finding Dory told. So I'm trying to think if there was some sort of redemption, like whether they led him on the rock at the end. But I don't think they did.
No, I don't think it either. So, yeah, so are we saying, I sort of, like, think about it, fair point, but I didn't lose a lot of sleep over it.
Yeah, I'm in the same boat.
It's a very small part of the movie, I guess. Like, that Kevin character was more prevalent, then maybe it would be more of an issue. I think that bird Becky is sort of similar thing, but she sort of, I don't think they make fun of her as much.
Yeah, well, that bird seems a little bit mental, but she's one of the most handy characters in helping them get into the aquarium and then, and out of the aquarium, so.
I would say that the Becky and the Kevin were quite weird characters, and I didn't love what they brought to the film, really.
It was more of a goofy character than a clever character.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So anyway, then we've got so Marlon and Nemo use these seals, help them team up with Becky, this bird, who carries them in a pail into the aquarium, so Nemo and Marlon can find Dory.
Yes.
And then we've got Dory, who's trying to find her parents, who she remembers, oh, they're actually from the aquarium. So we've sort of got Nemo and Marlon, and then Dory all sort of running around the same aquarium, missing each other, and it's sort of almost like an episode of Frasier or something. All these, like, just missed encounters. A farce, really.
Yeah. It was, yeah, there isn't really a much of an arc here. It is just trying to get to one place and then the next, and then just kind of obstacles set you back and that sort of thing. But I think from an adventure aspect, there's quite a good number of sequences there, and you meet some good characters. Some other people that I liked was Destiny, the whale shark, and Bailey, the beluga whale, and I thought the parts where they're trying to help Dory navigate through the pipes, that was kind of tense, using the, you know, what's it called? They send out those echo locations. Whatever it is, should have learned more from the film, I suppose. But I like those two characters. I thought they worked well.
Yeah. Yeah, no, definitely. I thought they were fun characters in the aquarium. I liked the whale, I liked the dolphin, I liked Hank the octopus, was probably the best. It was some fun hijinks in the thing. No real, it seemed like the biggest villain in this film was sort of miscommunication and sort of, like, missed opportunities rather than there being some, like, you know, Finding Nemo, the girl who wanted, you know, it was going to kill the fish if they didn't get there in time. It seemed more like it was sort of, there was not really against them. There might be situations against them, but not really any big villain.
Yeah, that's true. I thought that might have been what the octopus would turn out to be, but he ends up being a several helping hands.
Yes.
And I guess it culminates with the breakout.
Mm.
Now, this sort of, I guess, kind of pushed the boundaries of suspending my disbelief, where you have a bunch of fish and things driving a truck. But I guess it was exciting. I thought, you know what? I bet if a bunch of fish were driving a truck on the highway, that would be mayhem.
It would be mayhem. And it was mayhem. It was mayhem. This was maybe... I found it hard to believe an octopus driving a truck. I didn't buy into it. And I feel like it wasn't something you'd see in Finding Nemo.
I think that's true. There were kind of moments where, because obviously, you know, this is it's a fantasy type film. It's fiction. It's animation. It's a cartoon. But there's some sort of standard that it's held to. For example, like in Toy Story, the toys don't let themselves get seen. And they're usually pretty good at hiding from people. Whereas, you know, when Hank was steering the
truck.
The truck was a good guess. But what I was talking about, a stroller. Yeah, they were in a baby stroller for a while. And I thought, how is nobody going to notice that no one is pushing this stroller and there's this octopus tentacle, like, flicking the wheels? So just little things like that made me think, I feel like somebody would notice this, but whatever. I'm just going to go with it.
Especially if someone lifts up the stroller and sees Hank's face and he's doing his best baby impression. Like, oh, an ugly baby.
Oh, man. If your baby looks like that, it needs some lotion or something. Okay. So rather than we're not giving it high marks on the believability, but let's talk about maybe some of the emotional moments. Did we?
Yes.
I think the, you know, Dory finding her parents. I think remembering the shells and trying to follow the trail of shells to her parents, and just when she thinks she's not going to see them again, because I think she gets, I know, flushed down a drain. She finds these shells.
The parents have left the aquarium, so like they're told, oh, they've already been taken to Cleveland, and then they miss the truck to Cleveland. I don't know. Whatever happens, she believes, I'm never going to see him again.
And so just as she's down on herself, down on the mission, the adventure, she gets flushed out into the ocean. She sees these shells, so she starts following them. And her parents, they said, someday Dory is going to come back here and we're going to spend every day going out, putting these shells on the floor, making a trail of shells out in every direction. So if she comes back here, she will find the shell and follow the trail back to us. And they did. And it was so sweet to see them reunited after such a long period of time.
That was such a beautiful scene. But when it pans out, you see how many shells the parents had put there. And it got to me a bit, that scene, and I just imagined what it would be like as a parent, like, who's just every day, all you're working towards is hopefully doing something that will bring your child back to you, not knowing when they'll ever come or what day it will be, and for them, when they come out of the shadows and see Dory, pretty special moment.
Absolutely.
I got one suggestion. I want to run this by you. Do you think it would have been even more powerful if one of the parents had died? Dad comes out. Oh, Dad, where's Mum?
She died yesterday. You just missed her. I'm gonna go with no. I think
she went to Walter Frey's wedding.
I'm gonna say I'm glad they did what they did. I feel like it hit hard and was rewarding.
It was powerful enough.
Mm-hmm.
I'd agree. No one doesn't always have to die.
Yeah, not what, you don't always have to have a romance. You don't always have to have a death.
Yeah.
Yes, Dory finds her parents. They escape in a truck, turn the truck around, and they intentionally crash the truck into the ocean in order to release the fish back into the ocean. And the mission accomplished.
Yeah. They did it. And then they're all just in the ocean, mates, happy again.
Now, there was one little, I think it was a post-credits moment that I couldn't entirely...
Okay, here we go. So, at the end of the movie, I turn to Liz and I say, oh, is there something in the credits? And she said, oh, I don't think so. And we left. I heard there is something at the end of the credits.
So... I'm going to explain to somebody, it's somebody that didn't understand it is going to explain it to somebody that didn't see it. And hopefully...
Okay. I'm going to clear this up for you.
Hopefully between the two of us we can work this out. After the credits, we see back outside the aquarium a plastic bag, might have been two, but anyway, a plastic bag bobbing along the surface, and in it... I believe are some fish from Finding Nemo. The term tank gang comes to mind.
Tank gang.
And then they get scooped up and taken the same way Dory was to the aquarium. But I couldn't remember who they are and whether they would be happy or not that they got scooped up and taken into the aquarium.
Okay. This is the tank gang from Finding Nemo. These were Nemo's co-prisoners in the prison mates in the dentist's office. Dentist, so when Nemo office, got captured, yes, by the dentist, he was put in the tank with all these guys. And at the end of the credits of Finding Nemo, because it doesn't really address what happens to them when Nemo escapes and stuff. It cuts to like, I think on the road or something, them all rolling along the road to the harbour in these bags in water. So that's really nice they brought those guys back, because I did miss those guys this movie. I thought they were a pretty fun crew. And, the real reason they wanted to escape the dentist's office was because that he gave the fish to his daughter or granddaughter who killed her fish, and they were living in constant fear for their lives. I'm not sure it was specifically because they like had to be back in the ocean or whatever, but I can't really remember. We need to see Finding Nemo again, I think, to know exactly whether they'd love this aquarium. Yeah.
So that's good. It's good they brought them back. If you were wondering, if you had been invested in the outcome of the tank gang over the last 13 years. They made it to the ocean. They made it to California, and then got picked up by the aquarium. So hopefully they enjoy the aquarium.
I did miss those guys, so I didn't want to know that. But come on, they were from Sydney, and they got to California in those bags. Anyway.
I think I'll have to watch it again. I think the bags did look pretty grubby. I think they acknowledged that it was quite the journey to take in a plastic bag.
Okay, fair enough. Wait, there was something you were going to ask me.
That was it.
You were going to watch the podcast.
That was it.
Oh, okay. Good.
I was going to clarify who those people were, but I thought, I'll ask Matt on the podcast.
Okay. Cool. Is that pretty much everything? Like, we had a few voice actors, like, join this movie. Like, it's quite interesting. Hank was played by Ed O'Neill from Modern Family. And the dolphin, Bailey, was played by Ty Burrell from Modern Family.
Nice.
Sort of a nice little match of that. I don't know why they didn't get two actors from Veep to do these voices. Modern Family's very 2014.
Yeah. I know. I feel like Finding Dory contains less F-bombs than the currently having yeah. fish that was using words like ropey jism.
That is fair. That is fair. We've got Diane Keaton and Eugene Levy as Dory's parents. We've got, you know, a couple of different things. Yeah, Bill Hader and Kate McKinnon played a couple of fish. And we had John Ratzenberger. Did you hear where he popped up this film, Jonathan?
I did, only because I scrolled through the Wikipedia article.
Yeah. Was it? How do you feel like, what was your John Ratzenberger review for Finding Dory?
Highlight. Stole the film.
He was good as Bill the Crab. So, not a big enough role, but he was a strong moment in the movie. Surprisingly, he didn't reprise his role from Finding Nemo, which was the school of fish that pointed Marlin in the right direction.
Oh, yeah.
So, he's now two characters in this universe, the Finding Dory, or the Finding Nemo world, yeah. So there you go, John Ratzenberger. For listeners who haven't been following, John Ratzenberger, the one actor who has appeared in every single Pixar film.
That is quite the honour.
Yeah. When's he going to get a lead? Let's give him a lead one episode.
So there you go. That's Finding Dory.
Mm.
Time yep. for a review.
So we give it the score first and then we'll add it to the rank?
Yes. Finding Dory. I thought Finding Dory had a good premise, simple premise. I was on board with it. I thought it had some really funny moments, some good adventure. I thought it was a little bit inconsistent, but I thought the emotional high points, particularly Dory finding her parents, worked really, really well. Had to work pretty hard to choke back a tear at the cinema. So, I feel like I'm going to give it the benefit of the doubt, and just because I feel like the high points were so high, it overrode some of the shortcomings. I'm going to give it an 8 out of 10.
Yeah. This is directed by Andrew Stanton, who, for mine, is one of the Pixar heavy hitters. He did Finding Nemo. He did WALL-E. Did he do another one?
A Bug's Life.
A Bug's Life. These are all incredible movies. I'd say the other heavy hitters, maybe your Brad Bird, who did Ratatouille and Incredibles, and your Pete Docter, who did Up, Inside Out, and Monsters, Inc. So these are your top string yeah. Pixar directors.
Take that, John Lasseter.
He directed Cards 2, right? Like, that has to be a bit of a black spot. Like... But we love John. John Lasseter, great guy, and you know, without him, we wouldn't have the Pixar we know and love today. So, by no means trying to throw shade in his way. But Andrew Stanton, one of the guys without a blemish on his directorial life at Pixar. Here's the thing: I loved in Finding Dory the stuff with young Dory, the stuff with her parents, that sort of emotional journey. Like, it was so strong and like. You know, right up there with some of Pixar's, probably, like, not their very best, but sort of their top shelf, like, you know, middle best sort of stuff. There were bits that were quite uneven. It did break it for me, the octopus driving the truck and other things like that. I also really liked how Finding Nemo, like, half of the movie took place for Nemo in a sort of, you know, couple of square feet of fish tank. And the other whole film was this amazing journey from Cairns to Sydney and meeting all these interesting characters on the way and people on the way. And you have this journey across the ocean against a sort of to find this person in a fish tank and where there's no sort of movement or anything. And I really liked, thought it was really strong storytelling, where I think with this one was a bit more all over the place. And it was sort of like, you know, it wasn't really going through it wasn't exploring the ocean. It was more just going from tank to tank in an aquarium and things. And just seemed a little less grand to me. So the sort of action and stuff I thought was a lot weaker, and the story was a lot weaker, but they had this really strong emotional core that was really like, you know, Pixar, sort of close to it, its best. So I'm going to give it a... Have you given it a score?
8.
I'm giving it 7.5.
Okay. So we're on the same page. We're in the same ballpark. That should help us rank it in order to do that. Let's revise. I just mean read out for the listeners our Pixar rank.
I've got the list in front of me. Do you want me to read it out?
Hit me.
Okay. We did this last time. Do you want me to read it from the bottom up?
Sure. Let's go bottom up.
Okay. So how many are there? 16? I don't have numbers next to my list. 16. Let's say it's 16. And if it's not, well...
You just end on number 2 because there are only 15. Yeah.
16, Cars 2. 15, Brave. 14, The Good Dinosaur. 13, Cars. 12, Monsters University. 11, A Bug's Life. 10, Toy Story 2. 9, Incredibles. 8, Finding Nemo. 7, Ratatouille. 6, Inside Out. 5, Wall-E. 4, Up. 3, Toy Story. 2, Monsters, Inc. And 1, Toy Story 3.
There you go. So, I was going to say the bar is Finding Nemo. I mean, the bar, I guess, is Toy Story 3 because it's number 1. But I think a good place a good place to start is Finding Nemo. It's bang in the middle, number 8 out of 16.
It is the center film.
Yeah, that's what Finding Dory is going to be looking to beat. So I guess we'll start with that. Matt, did you prefer Finding Nemo or Finding Dory?
I think it's fairly obvious from my review that I preferred Finding Nemo. I liked Finding Nemo more than you did, though. So what do you think?
Finding Nemo is one that I haven't seen as recently. I remember... I think the way that you described it kind of... Whoa, Matt, are you in a windstorm, Matt? What are you doing, Matt?
Oh, I got restless. I'm moving.
Oh.
I know I shouldn't do that.
Yeah, Matt... Thought Matt got flushed down the toilet. He was going to end up in the aquarium.
I summed it up, Jonathan. I liked where you were going. Continue.
Yeah, I thought the setting, the exploration, the kind of the introduction to the ocean, the journey was much better. But I did find some things a little irritating about it. I don't think I found Dory as funny as everybody else did at the time. And Dory, I found Dory pretty likable in this one. And there were definitely some emotional highs, but I agree. Overall, I would say I would place Finding Dory below Finding Nemo.
Yeah, one of the concerns I had with Finding Dory before seeing it was that it could be a bit of the Cars 2 treatment of, like, you know, Mater was sort of this side character that was sort of the funny, goofy one, and they made the whole movie about him, and I was worried, like, ooh, Dory, I think, like, we don't want more Dory, because she could be a bit grating at times, you know? Like, do you get what I'm saying?
Well, you've compared it to Cars 2. How does it compare to Cars 2?
It's better than Cars 2.
Okay, so I agree. We have a parameters. It's above Cars 2 and below Finding Nemo. So what's a film in there to compare it to?
What about, which I think is the film that lands exactly in between those two films, Monsters University, which is another sort of spin-off movie, like another sort of like part from a franchise.
That's a good comparison. I would say Monsters University also suffered from being a little bit inconsistent. But it was definitely funny. I'd say it was probably funnier than Finding Dory.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. I think the things that frustrate me about Finding Dory frustrate me a little bit more than anything that frustrated me in Monsters University. I loved about Finding Dory, I loved a lot more than things I loved in Monsters University.
That's true. Hmm.
Do you have a lean, higher or lower?
Hmm. You know what? Now you phrased it like that, I might give it by a hair, by a... I don't know, fish don't have hair. I was looking for some sort of ocean analogy. By a very small amount, by a Nemo's fin, I would give it to Finding Dory.
So let's say that's the case. Because I probably agree with you. It sounds like if it's by a hair, we're getting close to the spot where it lands.
Yeah. So what's one above that?
The next one above that is a bug's life.
Ooh. I think that could be the ceiling.
Yeah. I'm like, I prefer A Bug's Life.
Yeah, I agree.
I think Bug's Life's a better movie. It's introduces a new world, the characters, really good movies. Okay. Well, do we just put it in between A Bug's Life and Monsters University?
Well, I think if we agree, it's above Monsters University, below A Bug's Life. We found the perfect spot.
Before we did this, had in my mind, when I was talking about the list, had in my mind where this film would end up in my head if I just could choose where to place it. And that it's that exact spot.
Well, there you go. Well, that's good, because usually we're in the same region, but a couple of times we have varied by a spot or two. So it's nice that after 5 years we're able to come together in agreement on a podcast.
I think in my mind, it's definitely better than A Good Dinosaur. If you'd had A Good Case for Cars or Monsters University, I would have heard you out. It would have been hard for me to think it was better than A Bug's Life.
Yeah. But without looking at the list, I was thinking this is above A Good Dinosaur, but how far am I prepared to go?
Yeah, I don't think we found a good spot. Just to make sure due diligence is done with this, are you happy with it being under Toy Story 2 and The Incredibles?
Yes, I would. I think both of those are deservedly higher.
I am too. I was thinking if I could make any amendment to this list, it could even be just flipping A Bug's Life and Toy Story 2. I'm not saying we're doing that now, but I'm saying like this. Looking at the list, I'm pretty happy with it. Aside from I'm fine with Toy Story 2 above A Bug's Life. But
the rule we set last Pixar podcast, yeah. I think it was A Good Dinosaur podcast, was amendments to the list are allowed, but in order to make amendments, we have to rewatch those films because we can't just
need a podcast dedicated to that amendment, the proposed amendment.
Yeah.
Needs to be like a session of Congress or so. Okay, we've Matt's called or Jonathan's called the amendment to the list. Both have to watch any film in question that's ranked to be affected, and then convene a special podcast to discuss it.
What a nightmare that would be if you said you come to me and you're like, Jonathan, I've watched The Incredibles, I now think it should be number 2. So you now you now need to rewatch Ratatouille Inside Up.
Yeah.
Watch five films.
The bigger the change, the bigger the time commitment to result, and probably the longer time like you've got to do it.
Very good. So,
yeah.
There we go. Another pod. You think after 5 years I'd be better at this? Another Pixar podcast in the books.
It is.
So, full disclosure, the finale of The Bachelorette is about to start.
Oh my gosh. I ended up watching that whole episode with Jonathan last week through Skype. I watched The Bachelorette.
I said, Matt, we got to finish this podcast quickly. The Bachelorette's on. So Matt was still on Skype. I was like, you can hang out. And then Matt ended up sticking around for like an hour and a half to watch The Bachelorette via Skype.
Yeah, got very invested. I got all the jokes on Colbert that he made about The Bachelor.
So, but we are. We'll do a quick housekeeping. I did have one thing that I wanted to do for housekeeping.
I don't think I've got anything. If I did, I've forgotten, so I'll just have to do it at the next one. Do tell. What's your housekeeping?
So I decided, Matt just doesn't have a choice. I alone can fix this.
Well, I'm excited and worried.
In order to celebrate our five-year anniversary here at Screen Verdict, I thought I'd do we could do a little bit of a giveaway. We have the...
Whoa, I like this. I love giveaways.
We have the sometimes mentioned, perhaps we don't plug this enough, but we don't do it for the money. We do have a Cafe Press website. I believe it's something like cafepress.screenverdict.com. And you can actually get some really cool merch there. You can get a T-shirt, a Screen Verdict T-shirt, a Screen Verdict clock, Screen Verdict iPhone case, all sorts of good stuff. So what I thought we'd do is give away an item from the Screen Verdict store. And Matt, you can let me know what you think of this.
Yeah.
I want the listeners to send in, they can send us an email. Matt, do you check the email? I'm pretty sure you're in charge of checking the email.
Oh, I'm going to check it right now.
All right. Email is the second option. First option, send us a message at facebook.com/screenverdictpodcast. And what I want the listeners to do is let us know their favorite Screen Verdict moment. So that can be just a podcast that you really liked, or maybe just a joke or a clip, one of Matt's interviews that he shared, maybe a challenge we did, you know, some pictures or videos that we shared, just something that you enjoyed as a fan of Screen Verdict over the last 5 years. And out of the people that submit their favorite moments, we'll pick one, and you can pick one free item, whatever you want from the Screen Verdict store.
Okay, we're opening the old Screen Verdict mailbag.
It's checked once every 4 years, so don't worry, we'll get to it.
Had a new sign in from a safari.
Oh no, we've been hacked.
Cafe Press for the account have sent me an email. Yeah. Someone sent us a message on YouTube, our YouTube channel. Yeah, so stuff's happening on the mailbag. Please send an email to screenverdict@gmail.com. Is that the address?
I believe so. So if you don't have Facebook, send us an email. And yeah, we'd really like to hear from you because I really enjoy doing the podcast, just getting to hang out with Matt. But we also love hearing from the listeners. So...
So best mem, best Screen Verdict mem will give a award the prize. I like that. It's a good idea, generally.
Very cool. So the Bachelorette has officially started. I am now off the clock.
Yeah.
But very happy to celebrate 5 years of doing the podcast. Hope there's many more years to come.
It's been it's been a lot of fun. Like, I want to do more of these.
indeed, we will. We've got some good ones coming up. We got Game of Thrones. I'm nearly caught up. Matt is slowly starting to hate me less. MTV Video Music Award nominations are out. That's always one of our favorite podcasts for the year.
Often my favorite podcast of the year. I reckon in the 5 years, it's been my favorite podcast of the year twice.
Awesome. Very, very good. So, lots of stuff to look forward to. We hope you enjoyed the celebratory podcast, and hopefully we'll see you next week.
Goodbye!